So good morning, everyone, and near and far. It is just so wonderful to be back in the Zendo yet again. This is the third reopening, and we're happy to be able to do it. And we're also happy that we still have this weird and wonderful technology that allows people to attend from far away or in the safety of their homes. Those home Zendos have meant a lot to us over these 2 years, and they still do. And they're all part of the Maha Zendo, right? Maha Sangha. So, yeah, I think last year we did the Dogen retreat online only, didn't we? Yeah. I'm sure I'm not the only one whose sense of time is getting a little warpy. Before and after. Anyway, I really want to thank you all for showing up this weekend to sit together and to take up the teachings of Dogen Zenji, who established this way of practice in Soto Zen in Japan in the 13th century. So I also thank you for not being too intimidated by the idea of reading a Dogen text together. There can be a tendency, and with some justification, for people to think, oh, Dogen's too difficult for me. I don't want to get tangled up in trying to figure him out. Most of us have some kind of reading that we shy away from, whether it's philosophy or religion or physics or poetry. Don't you each maybe have physics? Poetry, bring it on. That's me. But you might be different, right? But Dogen has elements of each. His writing is paradoxical and poetic. It can make our heads spin if we try to make sense of it in conventional rational terms. But his message is always radically simple and utterly relevant to how we live in the world. His message about practice and the nature of being is always radically simple. So I hope, as I hope you will come to appreciate a little bit this weekend. And as I said when we opened, also then to really take that sense of what of Dogen's practice into your zazen. So although we're sitting less and talking more, bring them together. Before we get started, oh, and I also want to welcome, there are some brand new faces and some old friends resurfacing this weekend, and that is a delight, as well as many who've been steady through these couple of years. So it's really great to see a range of folks here to practice together. Before we get started on our text, for those who might be new-ish to Dogen, I want to talk a little bit about his life. He was born in Kyoto in the year 1200 into a high-ranking family of the nobility. It's believed that his father died when he was just a little toddler, maybe 2 years old, and then his mother when he was 8 years old. And that second loss affected him deeply. He is said to have received his first insight into impermanence when he saw the incense rising from beside his mother's body. At that time, he chose to become a Buddhist monk. And we don't really know any more about that, what influences there were upon him in terms of family, but he was ordained in his early teens. in the Tendai school, which was dominant at that time. This is before Zen had even arrived in Japan. And he trained at Enryaku-ji Monastery on Mount Hiei. For those of you who've been there, some of us have. It's a mountain in the northeast of Kyoto that was just covered by a huge, huge complex of temples. Only a fraction of them remain, but it's still an active temple now. And there he learned the teaching of original enlightenment, the teaching that we all intrinsically have Buddha nature, we are of Buddha nature. And that enlightenment is not something out in the far distant future, countless lifetimes away, that we must achieve. Rather, that our essential nature is awakened, enlightened. Our practice is to remove the obstacles to that realization. Or we could say to allow those obstacles to fall away, to drop away. So in response to that question, Dogen, as a teenager, formed, or response to that teaching, Dogen formed the question that became kind of really central to his life and practice, kind of his personal koan. If we already are Buddha nature, have Buddha nature, why do we have to practice so hard to become enlightened? And he felt that Tendai practice, which didn't emphasize meditation, meditation was part of the practice, but there were many other practices, chanting and ritual as well. He felt it wasn't helping him answer that question. So when he was 17, he went to the very first Rinzai Zen monastery that had just been established in 1202 by Eisai. And Dogen began to practice with Eisai's disciple Myozen in 1223. So he was only 23 when he began his Zen practice. Oh, sorry. When he was 23, he was probably a little younger than that. And when he was 23, he traveled with his teacher Myozen to China. And his teacher died there. And Dogen traveled and practiced with a number of Rinzai teachers before meeting the man he felt was his true teacher, Tiantong Rujing, who taught him a different perspective on practice and from the Soto tradition, or Zaodong in Chinese, and who gave Dogen Dharma transmission. So after 5 years in China, Dogen returned to Japan, went back to Kenninji, but wasn't a good fit for him anymore. So he moved to the southeast part of Kyoto and moved into a little hermitage and just practiced by himself. But people began to come and sit with him, and he began to teach. And he wrote that first text, Fukan Zazengi, Universal Recommendations for Practicing Zazen, which we will chant for our noon service today, which includes those famous lines, think of not thinking, how do you think of not thinking, non-thinking. This is itself the essential art of Zazen. So in 1233, he was ready to actually start his own monastery a little further southeast in Kyoto. And that, or at least the present iteration of that monastery is still there. It's called Kosuji, and we've been there. And there he wrote many of his beloved texts, including the one that we're going to look at today. Before leaving, because he was persecuted, they were actually violently persecuted for starting this new sect, and the Tendai monastery up on the mountain had monks who were kind of warrior monks who actually harassed Dogen's monastery. And so Dogen decided to move farther north and establish a monastery deep in the mountains, which exists still today, Aheji. So this text that we're going to study today is called Painting of a Rice Cake. And it was written in 1242. So Dogen would have been 42 years old. And it was a year before he left to move to Aheji and found the new temple. It's both a significant text and a very engaging text because of the way it uses vivid imagery. And for the insight that Dogen offers into this fundamental Zen paradox of using words or images to express the inexpressible. So Michael has kindly provided us with an image. So you see here the traditional Zen Enso, which maybe is already also a rice cake. And the characters Ga Byo, painting of a rice cake. And there's one of these here for each of you. We'll put them out on the kitchen table. And we'll try and figure out, these are copies, but individually stamped. And we'll try and figure out a way to get them to the people online as well. Maybe we'll have to send you a JPEG version that you can print out. But there's enough for the folks here. The central image of this text comes from a quote from the Chinese Zen master Xiangyan. A painting of a rice cake does not satisfy hunger. You don't need your text yet.
Yeah.
Just don't even look at it yet.
Excuse me for a moment. Are we doing painting of a rice cake next? Because we just passed out.
Yes, you don't. Don't worry. Oh,
okay.
All is well.
Okay.
I'm going to. All will be revealed very soon. But this. Okay, so that's the quote. A painting of a rice cake does not satisfy hunger. So that is an expression of the Zen emphasis on awakening arising from direct embodied experience, rather than from intellectual understanding, from studying sutras and commentaries, which was common in Indian early Mahayana Buddhism. Some schools focused on study of texts and commentaries. And this emphasis on direct experience became central to Chinese Zen or Chan as it developed, starting with Bodhidharma, the Indian monk who brought this way of practice to China. And many of you will be familiar with the verse attributed to Bodhidharma, a special transmission outside the scriptures, not depending on words and letters, directly pointing to the mind, seeing into one's true nature and attaining Buddhahood. So again, this quote is harkening back to Bodhidharma. Now, I had never heard this verse when I started Zen practice many years ago, but it would have appealed to me for two reasons. Despite the fact that I was then and am now still an omnivorous reader. First reason, because of the power and indescribability of my own direct experience. And I don't mean great earth-shaking enlightenment experiences, but those experiences of opening, right? Opening, turning. Sparked by many different things, right? And two, because at that time, a few decades ago, there were a lot of guys around Kitsilano who would try and impress women with their superior spiritual knowledge, insight, and power. But it often appeared that they did not actually practice and had derived all this from books. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be like that. So no wonder the first Dharma book I ever read was Chogyam Trungpa's Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism. I loved the title. And once I'd begun Zen practice, the first text that I read was Dogen's Instructions to the Cook, Tenzo Kyokan, which is still dear to my heart. I needed my Zen to be down to earth. So once we get to this text today, we will see how Dogen, in his inimitable way, turns the conventional understanding of that quote, a picture of a rice cake does not satisfy hunger, upside down and inside out. That's what Dogen, that's just what he does. But first we're going to take a detour into another text that Dogen wrote a year before, picture of a rice cake, painting of a rice cake, called the one I just handed out to you, Ungraspable Mind. And sorry folks out there on Zoom, I should have warned you, and I don't know how many of you have been able to print these out ahead of time, but if you have it, please get Ungraspable Mind out of. Because this provides a kind of backstory to this image of painting of a rice cake. And the backstory features one of my favorite anonymous Zen tea ladies. In the old Chinese Zen koans and stories, there are a lot of stories that feature old women, often selling tea by the roadside, who specialize in tripping up pompous Zen monks and priests with their down-to-earth trickster tactics. So I think the best way to introduce this story is to dramatize it. So I'm going to invite two characters to come up. And maybe I think you're going to need your seats, because we'll sit down. Okay. Yeah, bring your seat and your seat, and you'll sit down facing each other. But River, you can kind of make an entry, because you're traveling, right? Oh, so yeah, we'll need the camera just adjusted a little bit.
Should be seated.
So I'll tell you when it's good. Yeah, that looks good. That looks good. So the two characters are anonymous tea lady by the roadside, and Deshan Xuanzhan. So Deshan Xuanzhan was proclaiming that he had mastered the Diamond Sutra, calling himself Diamond King Zhou. He claimed that he was particularly familiar with Xinglong's commentary. He had collected 12 bundles of commentaries. It appeared that he was incomparable. However, he was merely a descendant of Dharma teachers of letters. Once hearing about the unsurpassable Dharma transmitted heir to heir in the south, Deshan felt very competitive. He learned about the assembly of Longtan, Zen master Chongxin, so he crossed mountains and rivers carrying his books to meet him. On his way, he stopped to catch his breath and saw an old woman.
What do you do?
I sell rice cakes.
Please sell me some.
What will you do with them, Reverend?
I will eat them to refresh myself.
What are you carrying?
Haven't you heard of me? I'm Diamond King Chu. I specialize in the Diamond Sutra. There is no part of it I haven't mastered. These are important commentaries on the sutra.
May I ask you a question?
Of course. Ask me anything.
I was told that the Diamond Sutra says the past mind is ungraspable, the present mind is ungraspable, the future mind is ungraspable. With which mind will you satisfy your hunger with these cakes? If you can answer, I will give you some cakes. Otherwise, I will not.
Deshan was dumbfounded, unable to answer. The old woman flapped her sleeves and went away without giving Deshan any rice cakes. Thank you, Deshan and anonymous tea lady. In some versions, the old woman sends Deshan off to practice with Zen master Longtan, which he did, eventually becoming Longtan's Dharma heir. Here's what Dogen says about this story. And now you can look in your text if you would like to follow along. On page 2, top of page 2. Now, often in these retreats, we take turns reading sections, but I'm a little worried that people won't be able to hear, so I'm just going to do my best to project so everybody hears. Here's what Dogen says about the story. How regrettable. The king of commentators, who wrote commentaries on hundreds of scrolls, a lecturer for decades, was so easily defeated by a humble old woman with a single question. There's a great difference between those who have entered an authentic teacher's chamber and received transmission and those who have not. Deshan said to himself, a painted rice cake does not satisfy hunger. He is now known as Dharma heir of Longtan. Reflecting on this story, it is clear that Deshan had not clarified the matter. Even after meeting Longtan, he must have feared the old woman. He was an immature student and not an old Buddha going beyond realization. Although the old woman shut him up, we cannot say whether she was a person of true understanding. It is possible that she had heard of ungraspable mind and asked this question, thinking that mind is ineffable. Okay, just in case folks didn't hear the old woman's question, she asked Deshan, she said, I was told that the Diamond Sutra says the past mind is ungraspable, the present mind is ungraspable, the future mind is ungraspable. With which mind will you satisfy your hunger with these cakes? And if you can, I'll give you a cake, and otherwise I will not. So the conventional understanding of this old story would have been, of course, that that the old woman had used her trickster powers to show Deshan the limits of his understanding. But Dogen takes it further. He begins to deconstruct the story. He's not going to let us jump to easy conclusions. Dogen never does. So he says, if Deshan had been fully awakened, he would have been able to respond and discern whether or not the old woman was a person of true understanding. But since Deshan was not yet Deshan, we do not know or see through the old woman's understanding. Those who nowadays wear cloud robes and mist sleeves, that's a phrase referring to monks, who laugh at Deshan for being unable to respond and praise the old woman for her brilliance are foolish, right? So don't just understand it in the conventional way. We may doubt the old woman's understanding because when Deshan could not answer, she could have said, Reverend, you cannot answer my question. Ask me the same question and I will give you an answer. If she could have answered Deshan, it would have been clear that she truly was a person of realization. Asking a question is not yet making a statement. There has never been a case since olden times where someone who said nothing was regarded as a person of realization. So here Dogen is poking at us, saying, Don't think you can hide behind silence and think you're being wise and zenny. Right? You say you have to come forward, take a risk, express yourself right here and now. So many of the old koans dramatize this. Remember the old kind of alarming koan story of Nanchuan and the cat, where the monks in the two different halls or dormitories are arguing about a cat? You know, maybe they this side thinks it's our cat and this side thinks, no, it's our cat. So Nanchuan holds up the cat and says, say a word of Zen or I will cut this cat in two. And all the monks on both sides just freeze. And he cuts the cat in two. Or some claim he only mimed cutting the cat in two. We'll never know. It's a dramatic story. But he made his point. You have to be poised, ready to let go of your fixed views and respond to the situation. Save the cat. In the koan, he said, well, you know, if they could have said a true word of Zen, they would have saved the cat. Risky business, right? And Dogen continues, he says, groundless self-proclamations are useless, just as in the case of Daishan. Those who have not made a right statement should not be accepted, just as in the case of the old woman. Try to speak for Daishan. When asked by the old woman, he should have said, if so, don't sell me rice cakes. If he had done so, it would have been a sharp investigation of the way. So he's saying, neither, they were both holding back, right? They're both a little stuck. They could have gone further. And then he says, Daishan may ask the old woman. The past mind is ungraspable. The present mind is ungraspable. The future mind is ungraspable. With which mind will you satisfy your hunger with these cakes? Then the old woman should say, Reverend, you only know that rice cakes satisfy your hunger. You only know that rice cakes satisfy your hunger. You don't know that mind satisfies the rice cakes' hunger, or that mind satisfies the mind's hunger. If she says so, Daishan will try to find an answer. At that moment, she should pick up three pieces of rice cake and offer them to Daishan. When Daishan moves to receive them, the old woman should say, the past mind is ungraspable, the present mind is ungraspable, the future mind is ungraspable. So he's imagining these ways they could have played it out further, right? Enacted this. If Daishan speaks upon hearing these words, it will be good. If not, the old woman should continue to say more. Merely flapping her sleeves and going away are not like holding a stinging bee inside the sleeves, which means it's not, you know, she's not sharp enough, right? Like holding. Daishan did not say to the old woman, I cannot answer, please speak for me. So that's another thing he could have done. Thus, he did not say what he was supposed to say and did not ask what he was supposed to ask. So don't worry if you can't follow all Dogen's twists and turns. The point he's making is that we shouldn't take the story at face value. Both Daishan and the old woman could have taken the exchange further. They could have been a little more risky, played with the ungraspable mind of past, present, and future. So Dogen continues, what a pity. Daishan and the old woman's discussion on past mind and future mind has not been grasped by the future mind. Daishan does not seem to have acquired clarity even after that. His actions were only coarse. As he studied with Longtan for a long time, he must have had occasion to break Longtan's head horn. That means to surpass the teacher. And to receive the pearl from the gill of the dragon. Where you see the parentheses, that means the translator had to help us with it to understand that the gill means the gill of the dragon. And the pearl, of course, is the Dharma. But he only blew at a candle and was short of transmission of the lamp. Accordingly, monks who study the way should always make a diligent effort. Those who take an easy path are not adequate. Those who make a diligent effort are Buddha ancestors. So he's addressing his monks here. He's still only a few years into teaching a monastery of young monks. Some of them young, and some of them probably his contemporaries are even older than him, because some came and joined from other sects, hearing about this new way of practicing. So you have to imagine the situation here, who he's talking to. He's shaking things up, right? Pulling the rug from beneath their feet. Using language to subvert language. And then his last line, the inexhaustibility of mind is to buy a piece of painted rice cake and chew it up in a single bite. So this is the backstory I wanted to share with you before we move into the text for the weekend. Because you can kind of see how maybe he needed to give another whole teaching, to extend his own teaching about the painted rice cake. So this afternoon, we'll begin to find out how he spins this painted rice cake image out further. So as is typical for these retreats, we have succeeded in going no further than the title in the first talk. That is traditional. Par for the course. What I would like to do now is to give you a few minutes to reread Dogen's kind of deconstruction of the story of Daishan and the old woman. Reread what I just read. Maybe, you know, mark a few passages. What's Dogen telling you? Are you closer to, are you Daishan, you know, with your mind full of commentaries? Are you the old woman? Are you somewhere in between? Are you somebody who likes to know things, analyze things? Or you say, you know, just what is he telling you in this section and about your own practice? What's he saying besides watch out for old tea ladies at the roadside? Or maybe that is one of the things he's saying. Okay? So I'm going to give you a few minutes to do that. Just think about it. Make some notes for yourself. And then I'm going to put you in small groups to share and compare. Okay? So I'm going to pause. Well, thank you, everyone, for being willing to jump in and play around with this story, this backstory. And while you were doing that, I realized a couple of things. One is, I don't think we made, that either I or Dogen made clear that those lines about the past, present, and future mind being ungraspable are from the Diamond Sutra, which Daishan was the great expert in. But when confronted with what mind he uses to eat the rice cake, of course, he's dumbfounded, right? Which suggests that his practice is not embodied. And I'm sure a number of you maybe mentioned that or even could relate to that. The other thing that I didn't let you know is what this rice cake probably is. This character in Michael's calligraphy is the same character as from mochi. If you know what mochi rice is, that sticky rice. And so this rice... these rice cakes are created by pounding the cooked mochi rice until it's really sticky and
gelatinous,
and then it's formed into round, domed cakes, which are very moon-like. So there's an extra layer there as well. They're white and moon-like, and you know that the moon is the light of enlightenment, so there's a little doubling up of image. there as well. And then, of course, there's the Enso rice cake. We don't usually do Q&A, but just I thought let's try a few. If anybody has, are there any kind of questions or thoughts just to, that anyone would like to share? Oh, I see hands raising on the Zooms. They go, okay, they get to go first. Okay, Fred and then Kuya. Fred, go ahead. I'll repeat people's questions if need be. Fred is deferring to Kuya. Do we have a little Deshan tea lady thing going on here? All right.
He just liked what I wrote. He liked what I wrote. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, here's what I wrote. I'm the rice cake that never has been and never will be a painting of a rice cake, and I am the painting of the rice cake. I'm crunchy, tasty, nutritious, made from the hands of 10,000 farmers, reapers, grinders, and cooks. I've been baked over fire, swallowed down with water. A bite here, a bite there, 5 bites to go. The mind of sound, taste, texture, smell, and sight. A painting of a rice cake, drifting endlessly back and forth. That's what I wrote.
Thanks, Kuya. Fred, did you have something to add there?
No. No.
Okay, just notice that. Anybody else? Jacob.
I am fully unclear on this passage, what it might mean. The old woman should say, Reverend, you only know that rice cakes satisfy your hunger. You don't know that mind satisfies the rice cake's hunger, or that mind satisfies the mind's hunger.
Dogen.
Yeah.
Classic Dogen. And hold that question for the painting of the rice cake fascicle and see if that opens it up for you, everybody. Because Dogen has left us with this question, what is it to buy a piece of painted rice cake and chew it up in a single bite, right? So that's another one. So hold these as we go into the text. Mo?
I feel like I can sort of try to swim through the whole text until the last line. That's what really threw me off. The inexhaustibility of mind is to buy a piece of painted rice cake and chew it up in a single bite.
Yeah, that's your koan. He left us with, that's what he's done. He's left us with this koan. And then a year later, he writes another fascicle to expand on this painted rice cake. So really kind of continue to work with this image of rice cake and satisfying painted hunger. You'll find he's going to talk about satisfying painted hunger.
Okay.
So we'll keep going. Yeah, Louise.
That sentence says, buy a piece of painted rice cake, not a painting of a rice cake.
Oh, okay. We'd have to check the Japanese there to
yeah,
see.
But
yeah.
Painted rice cake could be something that's painted.
Or the rice cake itself is painted.
I think it does. I don't think it means, you know,
okay.
Brushing
okay.
onto the rice
like
cake.
A colored rice cake, maybe? Like, because mochi often color mochi, right? Like,
a piece of painted rice cake. Okay, I will check the Japanese before we come back to see if that, if, yeah. But he could mean that too, right? He will, actually. Wait and see. Because there are such things as you will see rice cakes with a character brushed on it and different colors. So.
And it says a piece of it.
That's right.
It could be painted in the mind as well.
Okay.
Too.
Rich, hang on. One at a time, please. Rich.
So
I found myself being very annoyed with Dogen. If anyone else was annoyed with Dogen in the way, this is 700 years later, and I'm wondering if in those 700 years anyone besides myself was annoyed with Dogen about this festival here.
Guaranteed. Guaranteed you are not alone. Guaranteed. I think that's a good place to stop. Because he, you know, he stirred, kind of, we don't like to be frustrated and confused. And so he, you know, he'll turn it and then he'll turn it around on us again. So let's close this part of our day. We're not doing formal chants, but we will now move into a kinhin period, and then just a shorter zazen period before service. Yep.